This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, number 111. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And call us on
020-88-167-691.
My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
So, Berners, I've been requested this week that we don't call the show number 111 due to superstitious reasons. If you're from this part of the world, the United Kingdom, then you know that 111 is a Nelson. That's unlucky for everybody involved. So are you a superstitious sort, Berners, as we are here in show number 110B?
Not really. I can't say I'm too superstitious. Maybe I should be. I might be a little bit more successful, but as it stands, I'm non-superstitious. I do like Mystic Meg, though. She was really cool.
Well, did she ever have any predictions that came true for you?
No. I often wanted to visit her and had to like run her hands deep across her ball and tell me I was going to score a double hundred or potentially take 5 wickets, but it never happened.
I played my first game this week, a friendly game up in the sticks against some decent opposition. And it was despite the fact that we had to go through pea soup fog as we were going up over the mountains to get to our venue. We arrived and it was a lovely day's cricket for all involved, and I got a very tasty 30, so I was quite pleased with my performance, and I'm ready to get into the league on Saturday.
The coach is alive. What a start.
What was interesting was that we tried that Batex system during training in the week, which, if you don't know what that is, that's a tape that you play while you're batting, and that tells you when how many runs you need to score in an over while you're batting in the net, and then you have to score those runs as realistically as possible. If you've got access to Pitch Vision, that makes it easier because it tells you where you've hit the ball, and then you have to run the runs, and so it feels a lot more like batting than just batting in the net. And funny enough, that gives you a whole new outlook when you walk out to the middle. Suddenly you feel like it's not a completely different game and you've been practicing in the way that you play. So I highly recommend Batex to anyone who's listening.
Yeah.
What have you seen going on this week in the world of cricket, Berners?
A bit of IPL action. I like to drift in and out of it. Our boss doesn't know. Shush, shush, shush. We'll check if he listens to this podcast or not now. but yeah, I saw a dramatic scoreline yesterday, almost 5 for 5 at one stage, but I believe they Kochi battled through to to our Indian listeners, as they battled through to the mighty 11 for 6 at one stage, with Irshan Sharma moving it both ways off the seam, walking around the ground whistling the Thunderbirds. He pretty much had them in the palm of his hand.
Well, it just goes to show, doesn't it? I saw an interview with him afterwards where he said the usual thing: I just put it in the right areas. But it just goes to show, if you get a pitch which is giving you a little bit of assistance, bowling's a pretty simple game. That doesn't make it easy, but it's still pretty simple if you can land the ball on the right spot 5 or 6 times out of 6.
Yeah. Well, it was quite interesting because just recently, I would say maybe last week, there was a certain batch of games where teams were suddenly scoring 190, 200, and they're only losing 4 wickets. And you're thinking, blimey, they must have some amazing wickets over there. Or, you know, it's heavily batsman-friendly conditions. So to see that get turned on its head is really good because, yeah, it brings back that kind of equilibrium of a 2020 match to say, well, hang on a minute, actually the bowlers have had their day here. I know it was only a bit of a one-off, but maybe we'll see a little bit more of that.
Yeah, exactly, and I think it makes it a lot more realistic for me as well, playing club cricket in the UK when the early season scores are more like 2020 scores anyway, because the ball is hooping around and moving off the seam, and if you get 30, it feels like 100.
Play the ball on its merit, play the conditions, lad, head down. Let's look for a solid start here. Yeah.
So coming up on the show, we've got a couple of great interviews. We're talking to Richard Browning of LCA Cricket Coaching, the League Cricketers Association, and he's giving us the lowdown on injury prevention in fast bowling and when, as a coach, you should look to intervene with that dreaded two words, a mixed action. And we also catch up with Pete Fairbairn, who, if you remember, last week won our prize for the online coaching course at Pitch Vision Academy. And the reason that he won that was not because he entered a question like we normally do, but because he's managed to lose a vast amount of weight and get himself super fit for the start of his club cricket season. And I spoke to him in the week, and he gave me the secrets of what he did, how he did it, and his motivation to get the job done. So that was a fascinating insight into how somebody who is not at the top level of cricket still can put in the effort to make sure that he's going to do a good job on the cricket field, and he'll be playing a game of cricket this Saturday. So good luck to Pete, and have a listen to how he did it, especially if you got carrying a few extra pounds yourself at this time of the year. And of course, we've also got your questions, and this week we'll be answering a couple of questions from the mailbag and giving away a prize of a coaching course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. And you can find out more about those coaching courses at pitchvision.com/academy. So without further ado, let's get on with the first interview. Going to have a feature on the show now where we're going to talk a little bit about bowling actions, preventing injury and getting the most from your action. It's always a popular topic with the listeners of the podcast, and helping me along with that is Richard Browning, who runs LCA Cricket Coaching, and you can find a little bit more about what the LCA and Richard do at lcacricketcoaching.co.uk. They run courses for all ages and abilities throughout the south of England. The biggest problem for a fast bowler particularly is a mixed action. So how easy is it as a coach and also as a player to identify somebody with a mixed action?
I think it's quite difficult to identify a mixed action without the benefit of video analysis. I think that's come into the game over the last sort of 10 years or so, and it's really important that if you can do, you get hold of a camcorder and things. I'd be very hesitant personally to conclude a mixed action if I hadn't had the use of a camcorder to look at a bowler's action from probably at least three different angles. Once you've got the footage of the bowler, the first thing you'd then look at would be the back foot landing position. This is likely to be in either a side-on position, which is where the back foot would be parallel to the crease, a front-on position where the back foot is pointing down towards the stumps, someone like Andrew Flintoff, or a midway position where the back foot's pointing towards maybe an orthodox fine leg position if you're bowling at a right-hand batsman, again, someone like Glenn McGrath. The back foot landing position would dictate the hip position, again, either a side-on, front-on or midway position. And it's then important to ensure that the shoulders and hips are aligned as much as possible. So you can see why the benefit of a video analysis might be in place here. Just because you've got to make sure the alignment's all there. With a side-on action, the shoulders and hips would be aligned if the bowler would look outside of their non-bowling arm. With a front-on action, the shoulders and hips will be aligned if the bowler looks to the inside of the non-bowling arm. And with a midway action, the shoulders and hips will be aligned if the bowler looks through the non-bowling arm.
Imagine you're looking at a player with a video. There's a certain amount of rotation of the lumbar spine there. Without going into sort of deep, you know, biomechanical analysis of, you know, how many degrees of rotation the lumbar spine can deal with, how do you judge whether there's a problem there or not? Is it purely from the bowler self-reporting about pain, or what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, personally, it's all about the stages at which you might intervene, isn't it? I mean, the best case scenario, as we've just mentioned there, is that the hips and shoulders will be aligned with every single bowler. However, a recent study, I was lucky enough actually to take part in it, of elite fast bowlers, found that over 80% of elite fast bowlers actually did have mixed actions of varying degrees. So when you take that sort of information into account, you can see there how, you know, in reality, hips and shoulders, as much as we want to get them aligned at the top level of the game, it still doesn't occur. In terms of when you'd intervene, you know, you've got to compare. I'll compare the study of 80% of mixed actions. You compare that with the amount of injuries in bowling these days, and I still think that the earlier that you can ensure a correct action, the better that will be. And it's a lot easier for a bowler to be able to change the shoulder position to align with the hips rather than the other way around. And I don't think you can actually do enough work on that. And I think if you can do it through alignment drills and making sure you can do things from a standing start, then you're not putting any further sort of strain on your body, and you're not going to be doing anything to the detriment of your bowling action either. As I say, regardless of age or ability. So that's sort of my stance on it. Is that you intervene at the earliest possible time, regardless. I mean, we still try and suggest that bowlers have a secure action, so hips and shoulders in line, even if they are not feeling any sort of pain, because you know along the line that when the amount of force going through a bowling action, as we've mentioned, it could potentially take its toll.
And in fact, there have been studies that have shown that through MRI scans that bowlers who are experiencing absolutely no pain at all can still have some of the indicators of lower back injury, spinal problems at a later date, even though they're experiencing no pain. So that's interesting that comes from your experience coaching as well. So depending on the age of the player, how much should you strive for perfection, knowing that there's a fair chance that you won't get there anyway?
Okay, yeah. Well, for me, it's... I mean, as soon as I see a bowler, I'll go through a routine with them, very much a similar routine that I've identified in the first question. I'll look at their back foot position. Now, for me, regardless of whether or not they are doing well or they've had injuries, they can always try and ensure that the top half matches the bottom half, because it's quite an easy change, really. For instance, if someone's got a front-on top half, so slightly mixed top half, but yet they're suggesting by their back foot that they're actually a side-on bowler, to actually bring that left arm or non-bowling arm round a touch to make sure they're looking on the outside is not a huge change, and certainly not one that's going to be too difficult from a standing start. So as I say, that's the process I personally go through, is ensuring that where possible they are as matched up when we're doing shorter drills like the standing start drill, maybe one step routine, because you know your muscles start to get used to the positions that they should be in, and then gradually that may creep in without actually changing any massive area of an action. And I think regardless, you know, even if the guy's a 14-year-old county player, he's still going to be looking to strive for improvements, as we all are as bowlers. And if you've got your hips and shoulders aligned as well, not only will it help prevent injury, but it'll certainly aid consistency in ensuring that that bowler can be sustainable. You know, the action can be sustainable for a number of years, hopefully.
The other thing that's been found out about injury and injury prevention in fast bowlers is the volume of bowling, how much a bowler bowls. So in your view, from what you've seen in your coaching, how important is it to manage the volume of bowlers?
Yeah, it's quite a dilemma with this topic between bowling enough to improve and prepare for a season and to take wickets. I mean, there's plenty of, certainly the old-fashioned bowlers, you listen to a few of the commentators, they say you need to bowl. You need to bowl to be able to prepare for bowling. But also there's the other view whereby bowling too much, obviously as we've said here, can potentially cause injury. I mean, bowling with maximum effort sends a force of, I believe, up to 6.5 times your body weight through your front leg. Don't quote me on the figure, but around that time. So as you can imagine, with the bowling action being unnatural anyway, this obviously has its repercussions. But for me, you know, you can still work on improving your bowling without putting that force through your body by doing things like drills. I mean, the simple alignment drill that I've mentioned, making sure that all the fundamentals are in place. Again, as I say, allows our muscles to get used to the positions that they should be in. My opinion is that a bowler does need to bowl to get fit for bowling. I'm better at bowling. I mean, there's various types of bowlers. You listen to Matthew Hoggard. He says he has to bowl so many deliveries before the start of the season because he's all about rhythm. Whereas then you'd speak to someone like Brett Lee, who says he doesn't have to bowl as much because he's a very powerful athlete. I know he's had his injuries as well, but he's very much a case of doesn't necessarily have to get the rhythm and things. He can just go straight into it. But obviously, everyone has to try and practice it to some degree. So bowling from your full run-up and things, you know, yes, they do have importance. But I mean, I see day in, day out, young bowlers being stopped from bowling due to the regulations that are now in place. And as much as I agree with them, and I was subject to them myself at a young age, I sort of feel that coaches and young players particularly should be aware that drills such as the alignment drill that I've mentioned, a very simple one from a standing start, can be done and will not contribute hugely to the quota that bowler may bowl in a certain day, week or month.
Well, that's a very interesting insight, and hopefully there's some bowlers out there who will be suffering a little bit less back pain and taking a few more wickets thanks to the advice. So Richard Browning from LCA Cricket Coaching, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Cheers.
Time now for the question section on the show, and as you may recall, as I said earlier, you do get a chance to win a prize, a online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, and there's some top names. So if you go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the purple advert that says world-class cricket coaching, then you can get all the details on how to enrol on one of those courses. And if you email in a question, then you can win one of those prizes if we answer your question and Berners selects you. So, Berners, what's the contact details for sending in questions?
You can give us a call on 020-88-167-691, or you can drop us an email at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
Great. And what's the first question you've got for this week?
We've got a question here from Josh Hodge. He's a big fan of yours, Coach, and he's playing up in Loughborough. He's an opening bowler. He's 20 years old, and he's just saying how he opens up the bowling. His stock ball traditionally shapes away in the air and nips back off the seam. Pretty handy, that. Mm. He usually tends to bowl just backward of a length and at a good pace. Sounds a bit like Stuart Broad here so far. And it, as far as he's concerned, he's classified as the leader of the attack. So his captain kind of chugs him the new ball and says, come on then, let's get off to a good start here. Last season, he traditionally bowled 4 to 5 spells of 14 overs plus, so gets through quite a few overs during the innings. And what tends to happen, he's saying, is that he picks up a couple of wickets at the start against some of the better sides in the league. The other seamers and bowlers in his side seem to go for a lot more runs, whereas his economy rate is very low, around 2 to 3, and batsmen rarely play a shot. He's saying that he bowls a really attacking line and tries to entice them to play every ball, but he just can't take a wicket. So he's just wanting a little bit of advice around that.
It's hard to say for sure without seeing him, but one of the common causes for that is that you're bowling the wrong type of ball to the batsman that you're bowling at. There's quite a big difference in terms of how a first-class batsman will play you compared to how a club batsman will play you. It seems to me, it sounds like that you're bowling the type of line and length and getting the type of movement that a first-class batsman might struggle against, obviously depending on the pace that you're bowling. But if you're bowling just back of a length, you're getting the ball to move around a bit, then a first-class batsman may well nick off. They may struggle against that. They're used to playing on better tracks, and they're not able to play it as well. A club batsman, on the other hand, although they're even worse at playing that kind of bowling, they're not good enough to get a nick on it. So you spend a lot of time beating the bat, and it looks good, and everyone goes, "Oh, well bowled," and you might even be hooping it around, but you're never gonna get the batsman out because it's doing too much. And you're bowling from just back of a length, so the batsman isn't being prepared to take any risks. So my advice would be quite simple, and that would be to pitch the ball up a little bit more.
Yeah. From the sound of things, he was saying he bowls the right line, but of course that's very variable with what length you're bowling. So if he is bowling backward of a length, it suddenly becomes a different kettle of fish than if he pitches the ball up a little bit.
Yeah, encourage the drive. Don't be afraid of the batsman who smashes you through the covers for 2 fours in a row because you've pitched the ball up to him. It's quite hard to hit the ball on the up on club wickets, especially if the ball's moving around a little bit. Poorer batsmen means they're more likely to nick off. And if you're bowling at a decent lick, then you'll get a lot more wickets by pitching the ball up and bowling a couple of half volleys in your efforts to try and bowl a fuller length than you will bowling back of a length whacking it into the keeper's gloves at chest height, and everyone going, "Oh, well bowled." The batsman goes, "Well, I didn't get within 2 inches of that. So, all right, it looked good, but it's never going to get me out. I'm just going to hang on in here and score runs against the other bowlers." That's what it sounds like to me. His economy rate's low. They're seeing him off, and he's not getting enough wickets. So, bowl at the stumps. Try and hit the stumps, and use your slip fielders if you're on the cusp of playing a decent level, maybe county second 11 or academy level cricket, then maybe you look at bowling that more first class length. But for now, pitch it up, do it the old fashioned way, swing the ball away, get caught catches in the slips, or just bend his off stump back and give him a quiet send off as he leaves, and that'll give you plenty of fivers and a lot less 0 for 26 off 12. What's the next question, Berners?
Okay, we've got another question here that's coming from one of our Indian friends, Jayaraman Kannan, who's a 15-year-old right-handed fast bowler. He's playing state cricket at the moment, so he must be doing something right, because that's a very tricky game over there to get involved in that. Mm-hmm. He's got a technical aspect with his bowling action. He says that his coaches are obviously trying to help him, but he thought he would get another point of call as well with some advice. And he's saying at the point of loading, his body is upright and his hands are in a good position. But once that right hand comes up to the delivery point, his head, neck and upper body all fall away to the left side, causing a strain on the back. So quite a common fault, I would imagine, in a young fast bowler. He's been told to keep his non-bowling arm straight and look inside it. So as you're often told to look inside that front arm and use it as a bit of a lever, as also to lean forward a little bit when he's delivering the ball. So basically he's falling away from the stumps at the crease. And he's just wondering if you've got any alternative advice or possibly drills to hopefully eliminate this glitch from his bowling action.
Yeah, well, most of the time the problem with falling away is to do with the front arm. The key, I think, is to sort of go back to basics, take your run up out, go from a single step and bowl from the stumps. And really work on bringing that front arm down and driving it in towards the rib cage, so you know your other shoulder comes through nice and straight. The way to do that is with a bowling partner and get into your normal position in your delivery stride. Maybe you're slightly front on, maybe side on, doesn't matter where you are, and then get them to put a towel around your wrist. So put your arm up in the air as if you're just about to bowl. Get them to put a towel around your wrist, and then they will pull the towel downwards, so your front arm comes down in a straight line. You can do this with a weight as well. If you've got sort of a weighted glove or a hand weight, you can do it with a hand weight as well. So the weight pulls you down, or the force of your partner pulls you down, but it's pulling you straight down. So your front arm is coming straight down and driving in towards your rib cage, and then your back arm will come over straight, and everything will get sorted out. So that's a nice, simple drill that you can do just to get the feel for what your front arm should be doing, and everything else should follow as a kind of kinetic chain. You know, arm, shoulder, the other opposite arm, and then the ball will come down in a straight line. With a little bit of work, a few drills to get your front arm in the right place, and making sure that your back foot matches your front arm position, so your shoulders and hips are lined up, then you should be onto a good thing. So have a go at that. Let us know how you get on, and good luck. In this next segment of the show, I talk to Pete Fairbairn, who, as you'll recall from last week, told us the story of how he managed to lose 4 stone following some of the tips on Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So I spoke to him on the phone a little bit earlier this week, and this is what we discussed. Okay, so I guess the first question that people will be asking is, who are you, and what's your background in cricket?
Well, I'm a 34-year-old dad of 3, and I hadn't played cricket up until last year, since I was about 14 at school. And there's a local side that is a best of pub side that said, you know, you ought to come along and have some fun. So I went along and played last season, and I was absolutely terrible. I think my highest score was 3, wasn't allowed to bowl, and never got anything really right in the field anyway. So, but I really enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and wanted to come back this season and actually be able to give a positive impact to the team. So sort of about December time, I thought, right, well, if I'm going to do something, I need to do it now. And started looking around to see how I could improve my performance and my fitness. And before I started playing last season, I was 18.5 stone, which was a bit of a hindrance to me playing.
You decided you were going to do something, and then you spent the next few months doing what? What was your plan of action?
Well, at first, I didn't have a specific plan. So what I did is I started portion controlling. I didn't want to do a diet because they don't work long term. And so my wife, who's a skinny little nothing and does endurance running and things like that, said, just you eat too much, control your portions. So I started doing that, and I started doing a bit of running and a bit of cycling. But I thought, I want to do well at cricket. That's what I want to be the reason for me doing this. So I started looking on the web to try and find some cricket specific training. And eventually I found Pitch Vision, and was particularly interested not only in the fact that you have this sort of really broad range of training information, but the nutrition was brilliant, because although I'd started losing weight by eating more carefully, I did sports science at school, so I was very interested in all the specific nutrition information that was given there, because it helped me feel like I was doing everything I could then to reach the goals that I wanted to this year, which was to be quicker between the wickets, quicker in the field, and just generally a better cricketer. Found ways to achieve it despite working in an office and, you know, having to take lunch in and things like that. Managed to follow the principles of cricket nutrition. And then I started doing the strength training as the base for any other training that I would do that you recommended on there. And started doing interval training as well, both on the bike and as it's been getting lighter, I've been doing that after work up at our local cricket ground, sometimes with others and sometimes just on my own. But it's just been dramatic. I've lost 4 stone. I knew that I wouldn't improve my technique until my fitness and my weight was right. So when we actually got into nets for our team this year, I'd already lost about 3.5 by that stage, and it meant that I wasn't worrying about being out of breath or, you know, getting tired too quickly. I could focus on my technique, and my bowling has come on to the point where I will be bowling for the side this year, and my batting has got to the point now where we've got a young lad who plays for us, who also plays for one of the Somerset teams at quite a senior level, and he's an incredibly fast bowler, and I can actually hold my own against him now, whereas before he just used to, again, wipe the floor with me. So the results that I've had from just focusing on what I wanted to achieve so far have been incredible. I'm absolutely gagging to try it out in the field now.
Let's talk a little bit about you, the way that you eat as well. I hesitate to use the word diet, as you say, it's you know, that's a yeah, negative word. Let's talk about the way you eat. Do you have a set of rules, or what do you?
The first thing I do is I try to follow. I think there's 10 principles of new cricket nutrition, isn't there, on the Pitch Vision site. I try to follow those at all times. So what I used to do is I always used to have no breakfast, a huge lunch and a huge dinner, and that was about it. But it was really unbalanced. So what I do now is I make myself have breakfast, and then I have small meals, I suppose you could call them, every 2 to 3 hours maximum. I never let myself go any longer than that without eating something. And within that, I always try. It's not always possible because obviously, you know, circumstances dictate. But what I always try and do is have some form of protein and some sort of rooty vegetable or fruit if I can't get hold of vegetables. And then on top of that, I make sure I have good quality fat. So things like nuts, the fat in the meat, butter, things like that, rather than all the rubbish that you get in pre-processed foods.
And you're not some sort of crazy, you know, full-time bodybuilder or anything like that. You've got a job, you've got a family. You have to find the time to be able to do these things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that has amazed me the most is I'm not some, like you said, I'm not a crazy bodybuilder. I've got three children. I've got a wife. I've got a full-time job. And, you know, various other things that we all commit to in life. And I had to find a way to fit in the training around that because I've tried, I mean, I used to go to the gym when I was a young man religiously, but once get married and real life starts getting in the way, things like that are difficult because you think you're looking at a couple of hours to go up to the gym just to get an hour's worth of gym time by the time you've driven there, changed, what have you. So I had to look for ways to do it with a reduced amount of time. So I got myself a second-hand gym quality exercise bike, which has sort of interval training programs and things like that on it. And through the winter, when it was too dark, really, or too wet to go out too much, I just use that every night. I've got free weights at home, and I use those at home. And then as gradually it got lighter in the mornings and in the evenings, I then started going out and doing interval training, started Nets in February, and I go down to the local cricket club who've got some very good nets in Axminster with my son, who's actually a very good cricketer, and we go down there and train together now that the weather's better. But it's just all about finding ways that work, because if you think, right, I'm going to do 20 to 30 minutes of interval training and then some weights at home, it's a lot more easy to achieve once you put the kids to bed rather than thinking, right, I've now got to go out to the gym, because it's not sustainable for someone with a busy life.
If you can do it, anybody can.
I think that's what I hoped would be come across from this, is that I think if you have the right goals in mind, then it's a motivator to help you to achieve it no matter what. So I just wanted to not be the fattest bloke on the cricket team, which I'm not. I wanted to be useful to the team, and I just wanted to also look good running between the wickets, as opposed to like some podgy chap who really has drunk too many beers. So I just kept reminding myself of that on the days when I felt I really can't be bothered today. Or I'm tired. I cut down television as well. That is one thing I did do, is that rather than sit in a chair in the evening after a day at work, you'd surprised how many hours get sucked away watching television or just doing inane things like that. So I said, no, you know, I've got to go and train. And having in mind how happy I would feel come the spring when I was running like a whippet up and down the field was a good motivation, and it seems to have worked.
Time for on the show this week, and don't forget that if we answer your questions, you get a chance to win a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com/academy. So Berners, which question did you prefer this week?
I think we're going to go with Jaya. He's got an issue. The young lad might get injured, so we need to sort him out sooner rather than later, and prolong his Indian cricket career. So well done, son.
Well, he'd be pleased with that, and there are some drills in the Andy Caddick fast bowling course which are perfect for the type of bowling that he's got. So if I could be so bold as to recommend one, we'll have the Andy Caddick course available for you, but we'll let him decide on that. Don't forget, you can send your questions in, and the numbers and email address for that are, Berners?
You can drop us an email, mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Or alternatively, give us a quick call. Our number here is 020 88 167 691.
And you can also get us on Twitter. Our Twitter name is at PB Cricket Coach. If you like the show, don't forget to subscribe to us in iTunes. If you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, you'll find us in iTunes. And if you don't like iTunes for some reason, then if you go to pitchvision.com, you can find the link to the subscribe button for any other podcast catching program. That's the end of the show for this week. So until next time, we'll see you again.